They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
It's almost Halloween, and that means the gentlemen are talking Birdman on episode 35 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Dracula, Frankenstein, and Gilman.
Boils and ghouls, welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast. Episode Halloween. I forget the number. It's terrifying.
You're so scared you forgot the episode. Yeah,
I'm too terrified to remember. All right, now that we've destroyed everything, my name's Chris, aka Dracula.
I'm Franklin N. Stein.
I guess I'm Gilman.
Absolutely. Yes. You're Gilman.
Everyone's favorite Universal monster, Gilman.
Is this the Thanksgiving episode?
It is. We're going to carve a turkey. And
I must have just woken up from a coma.
Season our cranberry. Whatever that means.
So what's up, guys? What are we? What are we today?
Oh.
And every day.
Hey, follow us on @CutPrintFilm on Twitter.
And why would you do that?
So that you could tweet us.
We are a movie podcast.
I was trying to get to it.
You tried, but you failed. We are a movie podcast, and we also have a website full of reviews and editorials.
Cutprintfilm.com. Taste the freshness.
It's free. Right? Just go there right now.
Trick or treat. Oh, it's the Cut Print Film Podcast. What a treat this is.
Trick or treat. Oh, wait,
we just did it. There's no need to do it again.
Dave is Skyping into this episode, yeah. So all his jokes are going to be a minute off.
All right, well.
I can only see Jeff.
It's a video conference.
Did anybody see any good movies this week? I hope they did.
Yes, well, I saw John Wick starring Keanu Reeves. No. Starring Keanu Reeves as a man shooting everyone. It's a... fun little film. He plays a hitman who's retired, and his wife dies. But before she dies, she has a puppy delivered to him in the mail, which,
well,
I don't know if they do that, but who cares? So
seems safe.
He bonds with the puppy. He's getting along with the puppy, and then Russian gangsters break into his house.
They're the worst of all.
They
gangsters are,
and they kill the puppy, and he goes on a revenge spree, killing
Theon Greyjoy. That killed
yes,
the puppy.
Yes, Theon. Yeah, I blew the name, but yeah.
Alfie
Allen. Who I can't stand the look of this man.
I love him.
Yeah, it's just a face. It's you want to drop.
He
look.
He's half alien, I believe. He's one of those hybrids from the X-Files.
He's half Alfian.
Get out. Get out of your own basement.
One of the things I liked, I didn't see this movie yet, but I will. And one of the promotional material things I saw was a poster that said, "You killed my dog, I'll kill your life." And I just enjoyed that so much.
That's pretty great.
It's a ridiculous movie, but it's the best kind of silly movie. It's a silly movie that knows it's silly, and it's having fun with itself. And it also, it's kind of this weird, quirky movie. It creates its own mythology. Like, there's this whole sub-world of hitmen. There's a hotel that only caters to hitmen that John Wick goes to stay at. And it's just, it's a neat little, there's a lot of character actors in the film. Ian McShane is in it.
Oh, I love Ian McShane.
Who's always delightful. Willem Dafoe is in it.
He is?
Bizarre.
Yeah. It's a fun movie. I really enjoyed it. It's silly, but it's really entertaining.
I like, is it based off of anything? Or
it's not.
Nice.
Which is nice. It's a nice change of pace. It's not based on a comic book or a game or a TV show. It's just, it's its own thing. And I don't know, I could see stodgy people not liking it. I saw the film with some critics, and the next day I saw another film, and those same critics were at this other screening. I heard them poo-pooing this film because they were saying things like, "Where was the police presence?" And if you're really thinking that while watching this movie, you're missing the point of the film.
My word. The police presence?
Yeah, I guess they wanted this silly movie to be more realistic and have cops everywhere, but that's not what this movie is. It's just about Keanu Reeves shooting people, basically, over a dog. And I can get behind that 100% because I love dogs. And if someone killed my dog, I too would go on a shooting revenge spree.
I think I've seen more movies this year where a dog usually has either been killed or been threatened with violence. It's incessant.
This plot particularly is reminiscent of another film that came out this year that I can't talk about without spoiling that movie. But yeah,
you're thinking of Clifford the Big Red Dog,
but
motion
I know what
picture.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I see it in your eyes.
I
know what you're both talking about too, but I haven't seen the movie. I know what it is. Yeah, but it's interesting. I'm one of those people who, when people in movies get killed, I don't blink an eye. But if a dog is hurt, I'm very upset because I guess I relate more to dogs than people for some reason. So,
well, it's like, it's innocence. It's kind of like a child
being
killed.
Fluffy ears you have.
Yeah, it's well.
It's like a child being killed. It's the same type of thing. It's an innocent bystander.
Even if a kid got killed in the movie, I'd be like, well, it's a movie. But a dog, like, how dare they kill that dog?
I always feel bad for kids for some reason.
That I just said Under the Skin as a joke, but that's why that scene in Under the Skin is so brutal, because the dog dies at sea, and then he comes back for the baby later on. It's like the best scene in the movie, where he just picks him up, and it's like, oh, you just know he did something horrible with the baby.
He ate it, I believe.
So, making it one of the most depressing films of the year.
Yeah, it's a laugh riot, I believe.
Funny is the pull quote.
Yeah, our pull quote says funny, I believe, on the poster for Under the Skin, with no exclamation point.
I wonder
so John Wick's a good one, then. Yeah.
I gave it a 8. I wanted to give it a 9 just because I had so much fun on it, but that would be a little
You're getting carried away.
Yeah, that would be a little too silly. So John Wick, I highly recommend John Wick. Go see it if you haven't seen
it. You'll probably give it a 7 later in the year.
Yeah.
Or a 11.
I will give it a lucky number 11.
Because it seems like this was like Lucy.
Or I'll give it a 7 as in S-E, the number 7. E-N.
Yeah, 7-N.
Or a 5-3-7-7.
What's happening?
Dave's talking in hacker terms.
I believe he's reciting the numbers from Lost over there.
Okay, and then we all saw a major motion picture.
Right. Yeah, that's not released wide yet, but...
It came out a little wider.
Yeah, if you have an art house...
It gaped a bit more this weekend, and...
if you have an art house theater near you... You might have been able to see it. We're fortunate enough to have the Ritz theaters. And
if you're blue and you know where fashion fits.
Yes. The movie we're talking about is Birdman.
Or Birdman, if you will.
Yes.
Gilman and Birdman.
Gilman and Birdman hanging out at the park.
And Birdman stars Michael Keaton.
That's right. This is like his big comeback film, if you will.
My goodness, is he fantastic!
He's great. There's a lot of great performances in this film. So do you want to give it like a brief synopsis?
Yeah, I was gonna do that, but I didn't bring it up here. So press pause. Okay, we're back. A washed-up actor who once played an iconic superhero must overcome his ego and family trouble as he mounts a Broadway play in a bid to reclaim his past glory.
That's pretty accurate.
And it's a very meta film, because basically Michael Keaton's playing a guy who, back in the 90s, he played a superhero named Birdman, and that was his most popular film, but now he's sort of washed up, which is similar to Keaton, who, of course, played Batman back in the
day.
I meant Mr. Mom in the Mr. Mom franchise.
And he played Birdman 3 times.
Right.
He didn't portray the character in Birdman 4.
Right.
Which is... You know, referencing the Val Kilmer
right.
and George Clooney taking the mantle.
So I really liked the way it critiqued superhero movies, just in those little small bits of dialogue,
right.
like when Michael Keaton's trying to replace that actor. He's like, "Oh, get Jeremy Renner," and he's like, "He's Hawkman or
yeah.
he's Hawkeye."
Yeah.
Like he kept going through all these actors who are.
Big blockbuster stars.
And they were all playing superheroes at the time.
The film is very much a reflection on just filmmaking and acting in this day and age, I guess you could say, basically.
Yeah.
And so what did you guys think of Birdman? We all know Dave really loved it because he raved about it on cutprintfilm.com.
Yes, Dave gave it a 9 out of 10.
Right.
Yes.
I really liked this movie. I thought it was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it looked amazing. As far as a technical achievement, this is a 10 out of 10.
Absolutely.
This is, Chris, you told us off the air that the way this thing looked was almost hypnotic. And
it
I
is.
Think that's accurate.
Not the entire movie, but I would say 90% of the movie is filmed as if it's one continuous shot. The camera's always moving either down hallways or different rooms, and it almost never cuts. Obviously, they really did cut because it's impossible to do that.
Yeah,
but.
I think we're really looking at about a whole series of 10-minute long takes right. that are so creatively pieced together that you don't even realize when the camera has cut.
It was. And I was almost brilliant. I was like mesmerized as I watched it, just to the fluid movement of the film, just the way it moved.
It's disorienting.
It is.
Because like the way it alters time too, because they'll move from room to room, but then it'll be like the next day.
Right. Yeah.
You have to figure it out.
They'll open a door and they're opening the door to 3 days later. It's really interesting the way they do it.
And some of the geography doesn't make sense.
Right.
But it looks
That's kind of cool, though.
It's fantastic. It's brilliant.
The movie, in most part, takes place all within a theater.
Yeah, the St. James Theater.
And the fact that it's jarring almost recalls The Shining, how it's always in the hotel, but the geography doesn't line up in that. And there's even a part in this film where they cut to a hallway, and the rug in the hallway is the Shining rug, which I really like that.
Yeah.
And the camera just stays.
Right,
stays
on that hallway
for a yeah. moment.
And it's like, I liked when they went outside too, because it feels like The Shining then.
Right.
When he's, the scene where he's in his underwear going through, that mm-hmm. feels like Jack Nicholson lumbering through the,
right,
the
yeah.
maze at the end. Like the way he's walking in like the same
yeah.
gated weirdness. Yeah.
But Jeff, I feel like you had a butt coming on to your Birdman.
No, I really, really like this film. 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Easy 8 out of 10.
Right.
I thought it was hilarious. I loved the performances. I loved the way it looked. I thought with all... this was directed by...
Alejandro González Iñárritu. I don't know how to pronounce this.
Iñárritu.
All right.
And he... I don't love his films.
I would say this is the best of his film. I like 21 Grams, actually.
So did I. But that's the only other one of his films right. I liked. I think Babel is a joyless mess.
Right. Babel is one of those... A lot of critics have criticized Birdman for being too showy and clever about being clever. I feel that about Babel.
Yeah.
I don't feel
Babel
it about this.
Utterly humorless.
Right.
It takes itself so seriously, and it's just not good enough to do that. It's not The Godfather. The
right.
Godfather is a self-serious film. This Babel was not good.
Right.
But Birdman, yeah, it's clever, and it knows it's clever, and it has no problem pounding its chest about that. The only issue I take with it is that it's a little self-indulgent toward the very end. And obviously we're going to get into spoilers.
I could see that, yeah.
Basically, at the end of the film, Michael Keaton, his character has a gun in the play, and
right.
he's supposed to take his own life. And in the rehearsals, he's used a prop gun with a little orange pin at the end of
yeah.
it. And for the opening night, he actually takes a real gun out to end his own life because of things that had happened in the film that we'll get into.
Right.
And I just thought that suicide, it's so telegraphed.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just, you know, anybody that's ever seen a movie
yeah,
knows that's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's played as though you didn't.
Right.
It's trying to, I felt that it was trying to be like, aha, you didn't see this coming. No, I did. You showed, it's Chekhov's gun. You showed it to us in the beginning.
Right.
But you act as though this is this revelation. Right. But that said, I like that after the scene where he shoots himself on stage in front of everybody on opening night, he didn't kill himself.
Right.
And
he shot his nose off.
As Amy Ryan, his ex-wife, says, he shot the nose off his face.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's brilliant because
right.
he's still alive.
I thought when he shot himself, it was going to end there and I was going to be disappointed. But
that's what I thought was coming. So, yeah, while I think that was a little self-serving and a little, you know, full of yourself.
Right.
I think Iñárritu, I forget how to say his name. I think he pulled the stick up and
right.
stuck the landing.
So you guys think that he didn't kill himself, because that's the whole movie up to the point where he pulls the trigger is a single shot, and then after that it's another single shot.
Right.
But
I don't think he killed himself.
Honestly, I don't think
it almost seemed like an epilogue that was kind of dreamlike. And
yeah, but there's too much that happens in that epilogue for me to think, oh, he really did kill himself. I really love this movie. I do think some of it is a little heavy-handed. There's a lot of anti-critic stuff running through the film, which I don't have a problem with, because I don't think critics should take themselves so goddamn seriously. And
no.
I think there's a running subplot in this film about, there's a I think it's the New York Times,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
There's a New York Times critic, And she just hates Michael Keaton's character because he's a Hollywood actor and he's come out to New York to try and act like a, in her mind, real actor, and he's not good enough for that. And she says basically, like, I'm going to ruin your play by giving it a bad review. And that scene is really heavy-handed. It's a little too much. At the same time, there are critics like that who are just smug as hell and take their profession way too seriously.
And at the same time, that critic makes some really good points.
Yes,
right.
She does.
She's not... I mean, she's a villain, for
right.
sure, but she makes some good points about how he's not an actor.
Right.
He's a celebrity,
right.
and he's just trying to cash in on a career that has floundered over the last few years,
right.
and he's trying to cash in on the celebrity of his earlier heyday by using by stepping into her world, which is Broadway,
right.
which is something to be revered and respected, and she doesn't think he respects that. So I can... you know, empathize with this critic,
yeah.
even though it is way over the top. And
yeah.
no critic on earth would ever say that unless they patted you down for a wire, because that would be the end of their career.
Yeah, I mean, while I don't disagree with what she said, it's the way it's presented in the film. And I feel like a lot of critics who've harshly reacted to this film, I feel like they're reviewing that scene and not the whole movie.
Yeah, the second that I saw... well, I saw this in a theater full of critics.
Right.
And... that line when he's like, what did you have to do to become a critic? And
right.
like,
That's a great line.
Yeah, and I openly laughed, and I was the only person in the theater that laughed at it, and I was like, ooh.
I remember after a lot of critics saw the film on Twitter, I saw a lot of them quoting that line in a derogatory sense. Like, they hated that line. And I don't know, I feel like if you can't laugh at your own profession, what the hell are you even doing with
yeah.
it? I mean, you have to have a sense of humor about it. But that said, I really love the movie. Michael Keaton is great in this, but I've always sort of liked Michael Keaton, as I feel like all of us here have, so it's not really shocking to me. I feel like as good as Keaton is in this movie, he's almost upstaged by both Edward Norton and Emma Stone, who are phenomenal in the movie.
I think he's absolutely upstaged
okay.
by Edward Norton. I don't think Emma Stone has enough to do.
Right.
Yes.
But she's wonderful.
What she does
as
have
usual,
to do,
she's great.
Great. And man, those giant eyes of hers,
yeah,
they're just captivating.
They shoot her through a fisheye lens
right.
in this one great performance where she just... blasts her
where
father.
She looks like she has fish eyes.
Yeah.
Like it's weird.
It's a fantastic performance that she gives, but yeah, Edward Norton,
he is phenomenal. He really blew me away.
This reminded like, I haven't liked Edward Norton for years because I just don't like the films he's been picking, and
yeah.
and he's such a smug bastard in real life.
He is. You read the reports about him being so unlikable on film sets, but this movie reminds you, well, you know what? He can be an asshole if he wants to. This
right.
guy is the real deal. He is an actor.
And maybe he was so good in this because he's playing an asshole. So
yeah.
this is in his wheelhouse. So.
Yeah, Edward Norton plays a character, Mike Shiner.
Yeah,
that's
his name.
Yeah.
Is. And he is a theater thespian that wouldn't do movies if you paid him billions.
Yes.
Right. He just wants to... like,
and,
get to the truth of,
he,
of
he,
any performance.
He hates fame. He thinks fame is beneath him, things like that.
But he fills in last minute for an actor that Michael Keaton just can't stand,
right.
and a stage light falls on him during rehearsal. So they had to get this another actor last minute, and they luck out and get Edward Norton. And he is just... at first you think he's going to be this great
yeah.
this great fit for this part, and then as soon as... they're actually performing the play for tryouts. Or
yeah,
no,
the first preview screening.
Yeah, previews.
Yeah, I think there's three previews they do.
He's drinking real gin in his scene, and he gets drunk, and Michael Keaton realizes this, so he replaces his gin with water, and Edward Norton on stage just makes a scene
yeah.
and ruins the play, and the crowd's booing. He says, did you replace my gin with water? And I'm like, oh, my God. Instantly got uncomfortable.
He slams the cabinet, and it falls
right.
like, off the... And then he starts going through the fridge. He's like, this is all fake.
Yeah, he says, the only thing real on the set is this chicken, so I'm going to act with the chicken. And he's just...
oh, and then he says, this is a funny line, when he's like, this is good bird, man. It's like the film is like ridiculous in that way,
yeah.
and it acknowledges its own ridiculousness. And that's why I felt like it wasn't too indulgent, because it was like...
right, and
we're being indulgent. Let's go with this. That's what it
felt
like.
That's the part that makes me not hate it, is that, yes, there are parts where it has just got its... the film has its head up its own ass.
Right.
But then things like that happen, and things like the ending happen, and just all the humor really, really relieves some of the tension of, like, this movie thinks it's the greatest.
See, I've seen a lot of people criticize the movie for it's a movie that thinks it's so clever, but it is a clever movie. I don't really have a problem with a clever movie acknowledging it's clever. I don't think that's really a problem. But like you were just saying, even though it's clever, it has a sense of humor about it.
That's the problem with all his other films. And I think that's why critics do not like his other films.
Right.
And that's why he's taking aim at critics. Because he is definitely taking aim at critics on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
That New York Times
but
critic.
It's almost like he's daring them to give the film a bad review.
I think I said that, like, it's antagonizing critics purposefully, but at the same time it's also very critical of directors and actors.
It's sort of critical of everyone
involved in show business.
Yeah, pretty much. Show business in general, I think, is the target of the film.
Because there's that one line where Edward Norton's like, oh, you're directing and starring in your own Broadway play, and he's like saying it so condescendingly to him, and Michael Keaton doesn't even realize it, and I just feel like those things, coupled with, like, even Zach Galifianakis' character is there to, like, show how even the production guys can be dicks.
Right.
Because, like, at one point he blatantly lies to Michael Keaton.
There's a line wrapped around the building.
Sold out.
He says Martin Scorsese in the audience, but he pronounces it Scorsese, which is hilarious.
He's casting his new HBO show or something. Yeah. And that gets, because Michael Keaton's, like, just...
He wants to throw in the towel, basically. He says, I don't want to do this
desperate.
Anymore.
Right? He's desperate to rekindle that fame flame, and he knows it's not going well.
Right.
What about the Birdman stuff? Do you think that worked?
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
What about the... one thing I was not expecting was all the fantasy stuff. There's a lot of stuff where Michael Keaton... He points at things and they move, almost like he has telekinesis, which obviously isn't really happening.
Right. Yeah.
Which
I hope that's obvious.
I've read one or two reviews where they don't quite pick up on it. It's not really happening.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of that?
I think that's just all psychosis in his head.
Yeah, he's got this Birdman voice in his head just taunting him.
Which I just want to point out, I think it's kind of funny that the Birdman voice is the Christian Bale Batman voice.
Yeah, it's Michael Keaton doing Christian Bale Batman. And I like the telekinesis. I mean, the film opens with Michael Keaton in his underwear floating in a meditation pose, and it's... The first voice you hear is Birdman saying, how did we get here? This place is awful.
Yeah.
It smells like balls. And I almost did a backflip out of my seat laughing. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, and he's like, we don't belong in this shithole.
And I mean, from there, it's just a great film.
There's one particular great stretch of this fantasy sequence where he's standing on the roof of a building and... This woman across the street says, oh, is this real or are you making a movie? And he says, it's a movie. And she says, you people are all full of shit. And then he proceeds to basically fly all over New York back to the theater. And I don't know how anyone fucking misses this, but even though he flies and lands in the theater, the camera pans back to reveal there's a taxi there. And the cab driver says, he didn't pay me for the ride here. And maybe everyone closed their eyes during that scene and missed it. I don't know, because that blatantly spells out that none of this is really happening.
Ride. Yeah. She was looking out the window, fantasizing.
Yeah.
There was a cool thing I picked up in that scene. When he gets out of the taxi cab or lands on the ground, a guy walks behind him and blatantly unclips a hook like it's a stage performance, like the way they would. You could see him like touch Michael Keaton on the back, and it's like it's obviously done to be in the film. They weren't like, oh, we better get that hook off of him.
I mean, I guess the only thing that could give one pause is the ending, because the film ends basically, Michael Keaton, he goes to his with his brand new big nose, he goes to his window, he sees a bunch of birds flying outside the window, and he opens the window, and Emma Stone, as his daughter, has left the room to get a vase for flowers she brought him, and she comes back, and she can't find him. And first thing, she sees the window open, and she looks down on the street, and you think it's going to be, oh, he just killed himself, but she doesn't see him there. She looks up, and we never actually see what she sees, but she smiles, and the film ends, which I just love that.
It's fucking beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful is exactly what it is.
I had tears in my eyes like as that movie was closing. Don't sound the crybaby alert.
We'll leave it to somebody else to play the crybaby sound.
But I don't know. I think that's why I would read into it a little bit that he's dead.
See, it's just that
His nose is too perfect for having just been blown off.
I feel like if this were about him being dead, it shifts to her point of view. And that's what makes it feel like it's not bad, because it jumps from his point of view to someone else's. So therefore he can't really be dead if we're focusing on someone else's point of view.
Yeah, I agree.
I just feel like, it's filmed. The rest of the film is filmed pretty colorful.
Right.
And this film, it's drown out in like these whitish blues, which is typical of a hospital, but it's very blue. The play is now a huge success. He's on TV, like he's getting everything.
He's trending
wanted
on Twitter.
The New York Times didn't pan the review or the play. They gave it a rave review.
Yeah, they laud him as creating a new form of theater, because he tried to kill himself on stage.
I kind of rolled my eyes at that part.
Yeah, that's a little too much.
But that all ties into me. At that exact moment, thinking, this film, I don't know about that. And then they pulled it out when he's got that brand new nose.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes me think he wasn't dead is that Birdman is still there, like sitting on the toilet.
Yeah, right. But he does say goodbye to him. But I took that as him saying goodbye, I don't need you anymore because the play's a success. That's why I don't think he's dead.
It's whatever it is, it's a very positive message. Yeah. Like it leaves you feeling good.
It is, but it's also
just like Babel.
It's even though it's a positive ending, it's also very cynical, because the only reason the play is a hit is because he tried to kill himself on stage. If that didn't happen, the play would not have been a hit. So he's not really the play isn't a hit because of artistic merit, which is what he's chasing the whole friggin' movie. It's a hit because he pulled off this big PR stunt, and it's sort of like saying the reason the play is a hit is because he's a celebrity, not because he's an actor, and that's why it's sort of cynical in the end.
See, I took it with that New York Times review as, you know, he literally bled on stage. I took that as him being validated as an actor, not a celebrity. That's how I took it.
I took it more as he fooled this critic, basically, because she's so dead set on hating him, and he just pulled off this big, stupid stunt. And he's not trying to pull off a stunt. I really do think he was actually trying to kill himself. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's sort of like a hollow victory, because the only reason he was able to convince this critic he's an actor is by not even doing acting. It's just by trying to kill himself, basically.
And
did I just bring it down for everyone? I'm sorry.
No. I like these conflicting viewpoints. I really enjoyed this film, and that's part of a good film is being able to debate.
I can't imagine hating this
movie.
And
I don't disagree with your point of view either. I think that's very interesting.
I can't imagine watching this movie and not having it make you chuckle and feel good. And it's almost like a roller coaster the way it whips through the theater.
The camera is on tracks.
We brought
lifts and falls. It
would be like being on a roller coaster and trying to stay stoic. Like that's how I imagine some of these critics that didn't like it. They're just like, oh, I hate this director.
Yeah,
I kind of like that.
I
hate it.
Every critic is entitled to their own critical opinion, but it just I'm sort of at a loss when I read staggeringly negative reviews of this, just because even if you don't like the story, like Jeff was saying earlier, on a purely technical level, this is an astounding film. I can't remember a film this year that is this technically competent and creative. It's just,
I will say that the negative reviews, as nasty as they are few.
Right.
This film sits at 93% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. And that's out of 120 reviews.
Right.
That is excellent. And I'm so glad so many critics didn't fall for the bait of that one scene.
Yeah.
And really were able to enjoy the film, because this is an excellent, excellent movie. Like you said, Dave, one of the best of 2014.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know if this is in my top 10, because there have been a lot of great movies this year, but it's easily in my top 20. And
I would have this in my top 10.
Yeah, this isn't my top 5.
I love
5.
This movie. I've seen so many good films this year.
First, the thing I'm most happy about is just that it's putting Michael Keaton in the spotlight again, because I really like Michael Keaton.
There. And so does Edward Norton.
Yeah, I hope both of them get the recognition they deserve, just because I'm just happy to have Michael Keaton back doing stuff again.
Even if Michael Keaton were not to be nominated for Best Actor, which I'm not sure he will.
I think he'll be nominated. I don't think he'll win.
I think Edward Norton will be nominated for Supporting Actor.
Right.
And I I hope he wins, because this is maybe my favorite supporting actor performance of the year.
I will say, even though as great as he is in this, I still want J.K. Simmons to win for Whiplash. For
I haven't seen
actor.
Whiplash yet, yeah. So I will defer until I see it before I make any more wildish claims, and I'm whipped.
So do we? My only complaint about Birdman would be that it doesn't spend enough time with the female actors, because they give great performances every time they're even near the camera. That
Naomi Watts. She's really shortchanged.
Yeah,
Naomi
and Watts she's great in this.
Yes, she is. And Amy Ryan from The Wire.
I love Amy Ryan. She's
what a joy that was having her on screen. She's fantastic.
She is a great actress. And Andrea Riseborough is very good too.
And she was in that Tom Cruise film, Oblivion.
Right. She was good in that too.
Yes, she was. I wanted more of her in that.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it.
Who did the lady from The Wire play?
His wife. Keaton's ex-wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's wonderful.
She's in a lot of stuff as well.
Yeah,
she's always in the background of films for some reason.
Oh, when he tells that story about the jellyfish, that was like one of my favorite parts.
That's a great,
beautiful scene.
And I love that because at the beginning of the film, there's a brief flash of jellyfish on the beach, and it's so quick, I didn't know what the hell it was.
I didn't even connect the two.
And then at the end of the movie, that flash comes again, but it's longer. And once you've heard the story, you're like, oh, that's what that is. But I love that because the beginning of the movie, it's so quick. I was like, what?
Isn't it jellyfish with Icarus coming down?
There's Icarus, there's a fire in the sky, and then there's a quick flash of a bunch of dead jellyfish on a beach, and it's so quick I had no idea what it was.
What's that sandy jello?
What?
Sandy jello is my nickname.
Am I in the right movie? I liked the music in this. The concept.
Oh, it's so great. I also love that there's a scene in this film which felt like it was straight out of a Naked Gun film where the whole movie is filled with this like great rhythmic jazz drumming, and there's a part where Michael Keaton walks down the hallway to the theater and you see the drummer in the like a closet drumming, and that's straight out of the Naked Gun film.
Is that Nordberg played by O.J. Simpson?
Yeah, it was just like very it added to the improvisational tone of the film, which I think the one take made it feel like a stage play.
Right.
And it was just, you can't let go. The whole time you're just like holding your breath almost.
It's a wonderful film. It looks great.
Oh,
the performances are great. The music's great.
Yeah, I don't think I could give it an 8 for hitting. Like, it hits every.
The only reason I'm not giving it a 9 is because of those slight hesitations where I thought, is this guy slipping back into his battle nonsense?
I would give it a 9 just because, I don't know, it's so much fun. And I also love that there's a lot of stuff about Raymond Carver in the film, and I love Raymond Carver. He's one of my favorite writers, so I don't know. It's just.
Yeah, I see, you guys just saw it, and I saw it like 3 weeks ago, so right. I'm. Every time you mention something, it jogs it in my memory. Like the scene where Edward Norton like just breaks his heart by telling him, he's like, he was fucking drunk in the bag. Like, he wrote it on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah, Michael Keaton's been carrying this cocktail napkin around with him his entire life that says, thanks for an honest performance from Raymond Carver.
Right.
And he shows it to Edward Norton as to make a point that this is why I'm adapting these stories into a play. Right. And Edward Norton just looks at the napkin and says, it's a cocktail napkin. He was drunk. Just throws it back at it. Just a flash, he just breaks him.
Wonderful. And it's even more heartbreaking because he tries to show it to the New York Times critic, and she doesn't give a shit.
Nope.
And he just leaves it at the bar. And that really, like, upset me. It made me hate that critic character, which was the point. So,
yeah.
Good work, movie.
But I wouldn't say she's a villain. You said she's a villain earlier, but I don't think anybody in the film is supposed to be.
I think if you had to pick a villain, you would pick her, though. I liked how Edward Norton is sort of set up as a villain, but the scenes he has with Emma Stone on the roof, like, humanize him.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
And you get that he's just looking for truth, no matter what he's doing. And, you know, that kind of makes him relatable.
Right. He's a dick, but he has a reason for being a dick, basically. Yeah.
I didn't really like those Emma Stone, Edward Norton scenes when I was watching the film, but afterwards I was like, no, they like touched.
I didn't like the initial one, but there's the second one where they meet again
maybe that's what it was.
It's really heartfelt. It's really well done.
The first one felt a little cliche.
Yeah.
Like, they play truth or dare, and it's like.
It's sort of like, I think it's because in the second one, he gives this long speech to her, and she points out how fucking cliche it is that what he just said, and I think that's why it works.
Yeah, again, it's another case of acknowledging its own absurdity, its own indulgence.
She says, like, that's the worst Oprah R. Kelly bullshit I've ever heard, which I loved. I love the R. Kelly reference.
Yeah, that's
there.
Pretty good.
Because that's the thing. He's an actor. He's not a fucking writer. Yeah. So the shit coming out of his mouth is just bullshit he's acted before.
Yeah. So,
it's great.
Birdman.
So Birdman, go see it.
Yeah. Absolutely go see
even
it.
Even if it doesn't sound like something you want to see, go see it. I mean, it's just an interesting experience. It's worth seeing. And it's worth seeing in theaters. I don't say that a lot, but it is.
It is worth seeing in movies, and this is just it's an experience.
It
this
is.
It's magical movie making. It honestly is.
Yeah, that's why I loved it.
They don't make movies like this that often, and that's why I was just really impressed with it.
This is something that you could only get with a movie. And that makes it worthwhile seeing it in a theater.
That's a great point. Like, a lot of times you see a movie and you think, if that was a book, it'd be the same thing. This is it makes the most of the visual medium. Right.
As good as it is as a movie, and it's perfect as it is.
And that's kind of funny because it's based on, like, it's an adaptation of a stage play being adapted, and it can only be done as a movie. Like, capture, I don't know, it's a little not ironic, but just.
Hmm. It's a little platonic.
I think that's
right.
It's a little bubonic. Just getting back to our Halloween theme.
We're going
to
take a break, and when we come back,
we're going to take a break into this Kit Kat bar that I got trick-or-treating a week early.
It's a little semi-sonic.
No, too late. Oh, no. Too late. We're going to take a break.
Like this podcast.
And when we come back, we're going to play a spooky game.
Oh, I'm terrified.
It's hypnotic.
This morning, Billy looked like any other boy, but as the moon rose, he turned into a werewolf. He used new Pa's Halloween makeup kits. His friends did too. Look, Mike's a vampire. Amy's a ghost. Pa's makeup is safer than masks. It never blocks vision, and it's hypoallergenic too. So watch your kids turn into the creatures they really are with new Pa's Halloween makeup kits.
Put a spell on you.
Ooh.
'Cause you're mine.
Go on.
You don't say
I put
that.
A Birdman on you.
Please don't.
You better stop the things you do.
So you can fly.
Wow, you sound just like her.
Oh, we didn't talk about that awesome action sequence in Birdman.
It's okay.
We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, when we talk about Birdman
but
again.
It makes no sense.
It was actually fucking impressive and awesome. You know, but enough about Birdman.
Right.
Enough about Bird Me.
Bird Me.
Bird Me. Let's talk about hard.
What was that?
Well,
I want to play a game too.
That's right. Halloween is just around the graveyard corner, kids.
There's corners and graveyards.
There are. What are you talking about? They're laid out like cities of the dead, necropolises, if you will. Thank you, Jigsaw.
So yeah, we're gonna play the.
That's
horror.
Robert Loggia.
Oh, he should quit smoking.
We're gonna play the horror movie game That's show great. And. What's the premise of this game? How do we play?
So we have a series.
We name a horror movie, and you tell us who the key grip was.
That sounds like a terrible game.
That's a dreadfully boring game.
Well,
it's almost scary.
Well, perhaps you should play the theme song, and it will explain the game for everyone at home.
Okay.
Here it goes.
I want to play a game.
It's the horror movie death game. See if you can guess which movie these deaths are from, and then eat some candy corn.
Trick or treat, baby.
That's right. It's the horror movie death game.
Ooh, that is scary.
What was the trick or treat, baby?
That is from the Rob Zombie Halloween. Because he's such a goddamn hack, he had to have a... There's a scene in the Rob Zombie Halloween where...
Was that Mike Myers saying that?
No, there's a
there's Mike Myers from Wayne's World 2.
There's a guard at Smith's Grove where Michael Myers is being held, and he says, "What cuckoo are we moving tonight?" Because that's how people in mental institutions talk. They call everyone cuckoos. And the woman goes, "Michael Myers." And he goes, "Trick or treat, baby," because he knows Michael Myers kills people on Halloween. Ugh. And it's a terrible movie.
Oh, let's get this started.
Okay. What's... Uh-oh, is it... Are we at the Laser Light Show?
We're at Laser Floyd.
Yeah, is Laser Floyd about to start? Get those fog machines going.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go. All
right.
Since no one else
is... trying to get the music to an acceptable level.
Okay. All right. So again...
Chris, you go.
All right. The premise of the game, again, is we're going to read particular deaths, and we have to... guess what film it's from, and if you horror movie franchise?
Yeah, it's got to be a franchise.
And it can't be too hard,
right? And if you guess the actual film it's from, not just the franchise, you get a point and a half.
Right.
Okay. So, first death.
What if it's not from a franchise in a single film?
You're fucking fired.
You didn't pay attention.
Yeah. I didn't know the rules.
Well, that's why we're gonna put you in the rack after this game is over.
Get that wheel that Iron Maiden out.
Only two of mine are from franchises.
Well, you have time to look for more right now. All right, the first death is someone has their face slashed four times with a sharp finger. Then the skin is bitten off their face, and then a hand is smashed into their chest, and their heart is pulled out.
Is it Mortal Kombat 2? Is that Kano's friendship move?
No. You're thinking of babyality when they turn each other into babies.
Seems legit.
No, it is not that. Dave, do you have a guess?
I would go with Puppet Master.
No.
All right, can I give my actual guess?
Yes.
I know it wasn't Mortal Kombat.
Oh, sorry.
Is it Nightmare on Elm Street?
No.
No, all right.
All right, second clue from the same film. Someone is impaled through the neck and then decapitated with a scissor-like chain.
A scissor-like chain.
Mm. While listening to the Scissor Sisters.
Wait, what's the death again?
Someone is impaled through the neck, and then once they're impaled, the scissor-like chain ends up cutting their head off.
Jesus Christ.
Is it Joyride?
That's not a... Actually, it is a franchise, but no, it is not Joyride. There are three Joyride movies, if you can believe it.
That's three too many.
That's what I'm picking.
Dave, don't tell us.
Man, I don't know. Chud. Is it Chud?
No.
Oh,
all right, here's the last clue. Several people die when a space station explodes.
Good Lord.
What? Jason.
No.
Oh, Friday the 13th, I mean.
And yeah, but no. I know what you meant. I didn't think you meant Jason the Argonauts.
A space station explodes.
All right. Remember, a chain is involved. That should give a clue. Chains are a big part of this horror franchise.
Oh, Hellraiser.
Yes, that is the franchise. You want to take a stab at what film it is?
It has to be the eighth one.
What's the title?
Is it Deader?
No.
Oh. All right.
Well, Hellraiser. Jeff gets it because it is it is Hellraiser. It's Hellraiser Bloodline.
Directed, is that the last one?
No, that's one directed by Alan Smithy. The director took his name off the film.
The fake director.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That one has Pinhead in space.
That's
so.
The one with the cube.
And this podcast has three pinheads on mic.
They all have cubes. So Hellraiser Bloodline, Jeff gets a point.
All right. I guess I'll go.
Yeah, you better.
Okay. Let's get my kill up here.
The music is creepy.
Know, it's making horrifying. Me want some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
All right, ready?
It's not a baseball game.
Oh, don't they play this at all the baseball games?
A man is decapitated when a flatbed truck carrying a pane of glass reverses toward him, stops abruptly, and sends the sheet of glass through the man's neck. His severed head is sent bouncing all over the place.
I will guess.
Guess.
Is it The Omen?
It is. Yeah. Which Omen?
The first one.
The Omen 2.
It's the first one, right?
The original or the remake?
Well, it happens in both versions.
Which one am I talking about, though?
I really
scan me, Chris.
I really hope it's not the remake.
It is not. You get the point and one half.
The terrible, terrible remake.
I don't even have to read my other clues.
What were they? Just for shits and giggles. Just read one.
A man is impaled by a lightning rod that falls from the church he was trying to seek shelter in.
Okay.
And the third one would have been the giveaway. A woman hangs herself in front of a children's party.
The third one was, the son is the devil. Like, that's not even a kill.
So, Chris gets a point and a half. Nice. I have a point. Dave,
you're up.
Hmm. Okay, well, allow me to read from this piece of paper.
Oh, what good Foley work. Is Mick Foley in the room?
While taking his shit...
I love it.
A man is murdered by a beehive being shaken over his head on a stick.
A beehive? What the fuck?
Is this
the stall is locked with a piece of balsa wood, so naturally he cannot escape.
A beehive? Is this Bee Movie, the horror film?
No, it is not.
Is this... Man, that's a tough one. Is it Wicker Man?
Wicker Man.
No.
No.
There's right. No shitting in Wicker Man.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Unfortunately.
The bees got me.
All right, do you have another clue?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You're deferring.
I want to say it's The Crush, but that's not a franchise.
No.
It's not The Crush? Okay. Because there is a scene in The Crush where Alicia Silverstone tries to kill Carrie Elway's girlfriend with bees.
Four sexy campers are hacked apart with a hatchet in sleeping bags.
Oh, this has to be Friday the 13th.
It could. I don't remember bees in Friday the 13th. Is it? Is it Hatchet? One of the Hatchet films?
Is it Hackman?
No.
The Gene Hackman biopic. He killed people with bees, I believe.
It is not Hatchet.
All right.
Give that Gary Paulsen novel.
Give that third and final.
Okay. Here we go.
That's a good one, Dave. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Good work. You've stumped the experts.
A stool.
All right, well, let me guess.
A stool is pulled out from under a vat of boiling water that falls on a man and scalds him to death.
What?
Scalds him to death.
What movie is this? Is this a movie you made and never told us about? The Killer Bees.
This is ridiculous.
Smothered with a pillow while a hot hair curler is inserted into vagina.
Oh, my God.
Earth? Are you watching? What kind of filth do you have?
Dave, does your mother know you've seen this film?
Do you guys give up?
Sleepaway Camp?
Yes!
Ah!
Which one?
One.
Yes!
Okay.
Shit.
Give me that point and a half.
See, if you had said the girl reveals she has a dick at the end, I would have gotten that. Because that's the only thing I remember from Sleepaway Camp.
All right. My turn.
You guys have to watch that bee scene, by the way, because it is the most poorly directed thing I've ever seen in my life.
I somehow don't remember. I just remember that ending. It's all I remember. I remember the bees. Yes, Jeff, it is your turn, by the way.
I'm very excited about this.
Okay.
You have 1.5 points. I have 2.5 points. Yes. Dave, of course, has 0 points.
Of course.
All right. A man in... let's see. What order do I want to read these in? All right. A man is strangled to death with barbed wire.
Ooh. Is it
barbed wire?
With Pamela Anderson? Is it one of the Hellraiser films?
It is not.
Okay.
All right. Clue numeral 2. A sheriff is stabbed in the head with a claw hammer.
Oh, is it Wrong Turn?
No, it is not.
I would say...
This fucking music is terrifying.
You said you'd pick things I would know.
I did.
Is this... Halloween?
No, it is not. All right. Third and final clue. A man in a wheelchair is stabbed in the head, and his dead body and the wheelchair immediately roll backward down an enormous flight of stone steps.
This is Friday the 13th, part 3.
You have the franchise, right?
Four.
No.
Fuck. Two.
Well, it is two, but that doesn't count.
All right. Well, so it's Friday the 13th. All right.
You definitely get that full point.
I can never remember them.
Yeah, well, they're really pretty much all the same.
Yeah.
Although, I will say, Friday the 13th, those movies hold up somehow.
I love them. I love all those films.
All right, you're up.
Oh, shit. I guess I should do something.
Am I up?
No.
No,
you're down. How'd it go that way?
You're down.
That's the way we always go.
Yeah, that's the way we sit. All right. Clue number 1. Someone is hit in the head with a golf club, and then darts are thrown into their back and hand, and then they're strangled with a yo-yo.
I got it.
Yes?
Child's Play.
Which one?
2.
No.
Shit, really?
But it's 3, but you get the point.
Oh, fuck. I really thought I had a 2.
I thought I had the last one. I'll just read the other 2 clues real quick. Someone is crushed in a garbage truck. Someone jumps on a live grenade and is blown up.
Oh, that's the one that takes place at the army. Military. Yeah.
And it's terrible.
It really is a bad movie. Dave, you just got shut out of that one.
Sorry. So what is it? It's you're 2.5 or 3?
I have 3.5. You have 2.5. Dave has 0.
Come on, Dave. Get on the board.
Doing God's work.
Well, I almost stumped you guys.
That's true. I was very impressed.
You did.
Not with this one.
Yeah. Michael Myers stabs a woman.
Dracula turns into a bat.
The Velociraptor.
A man backflips off of a cliff and is immediately devoured upon entering the water.
What the fuck?
Is this Free Willy 2?
No, this is not Free Willy 2.
Free William.
Oh, yeah, yes. All right.
Is it Piranha?
You have the franchise.
Piranha 2.
No, it is Piranha 3D.
I didn't know.
All right, so you get that point. This game's going fast, I'll be honest. I didn't think it was going to go.
It's called the Lightning Game.
It's not called that, but okay.
All right, is this round 3?
Yeah.
Okay. The killer electrocutes a man with jumper cables attached to a running car.
Ooh.
Anyone?
Got it.
That sounds familiar.
Well, that happened last night to me.
It's in the Bible, if I'm not mistaken.
It's in the back part of the Bible.
Let me think about this one. Is it?
No, are you Googling
the
it?
The Saw series?
No, it is not. All right.
I don't have a guess.
Hang on. Somebody stop the music. It's back.
The man playing the organ got tired.
The killer decapitates a Mother Superior nun and hides the severed head in the bed of another nun.
Oh.
Is it Silent Night, Deadly Night?
That's the franchise.
It's got to be part two.
It is part two.
Yes!
Well, that went fast.
This is kind of awkward.
I got more. We got more. I got one.
Because I have Silent Night on my list, the same movie, and I wasn't able to guess Jeff's.
You are very bad at this.
Dave has solidified his position as the worst person ever.
Okay. All right, so what do I have? 3.5? You have 4?
I think you have 4.5 now.
What do you have?
I have 3.5.
Okay. And Dave has 7, right?
Dave is holding steady at 0 points.
All right, here we go.
Good work, everyone.
Here we go.
This is like golf, though, right?
Yeah, it's horseshoes. If you have a dangler, you're fine.
All right, here we go. Dave, I don't know if you'll get this, but
it's a leaner.
I'm pulling for you. Here we go.
I don't play horseshoes. I'm not 75 years old.
Clue number one. Someone is killed by 5 medical tools in their chest.
Is this Dr. Giggles?
It's not, damn, but I wish I had. But there's not Dr. Giggles 2, sadly, or I would have picked it.
What was it again?
Someone is killed by 5 medical tools in their chest.
I don't know.
Let me just say, if neither of you get this, the last clue is going to give it away.
I have no idea so far.
Second clue. Someone is electrocuted to death by a robot.
A robot? Okay. I can't recall. Puppet Master?
No.
Oh, all right.
All right, the last clue, and this
is... Wait, I didn't guess. Yeah,
please, Dave, please guess.
Is this Alien?
No.
That was a joke.
Sure it was. Last clue. Someone has their ear bitten off, then their toe bitten off, then they are shot with an arrow via magic, and then they are beaten with a shillelagh and strangled with a phone cord.
Jesus Christ.
This is
Leprechaun.
All right, but which one? Dave, you want to try and guess which one?
Origins.
No. Nothing this interesting happens in Leprechaun Origins.
I'm going to guess In the Hood.
No, it is Leprechaun 3.
Is it the one where he's in space?
No.
That's just called 3?
I think it's called Leprechaun 3, Back to the Majors.
Chris, you and I are tied.
Okay.
And I don't have a tiebreaker.
Dave, I do.
I do, actually, and so does Dave. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
A man is killed by a man with leather on his face.
Hmm.
Are you just making this up?
Yes.
Is it Alien?
I do not have a tiebreaker.
Just read your third clue.
Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh.
Oh, wait, I can read you one that's...
All right, read that's not a franchise.
This is not from a franchise. All right,
we'll go with that.
All right, that's good. It's a good tiebreaker. It's a standalone.
Okay. The engine of the spaceship is overheating. Unfortunately for this man,
Horizon?
No.
Oh.
Unfortunately for this man, He must jump into the cooling fluid and become stuck, turning into a human popsicle.
Sunrise. Sunshine.
Oh, you almost won, Jeff.
Well,
but then Chris won with Sunshine.
Now, did you guess which one in the franchise?
Yeah, I believe it's Sunshine X.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's that game.
Yeah.
And we probably won't play that ever again.
Oh, I thought it was fine.
Now we'll play that next Halloween. Make it special.
Yeah.
So
we'll play next Halloween. We'll do all the people who live, the exciting
that
adventures.
Seems like
of people
a
who
much,
live.
A terrible game, really. She's a girl.
She's a virgin.
Runs away gingerly. So what's going on in Halloween land?
So yeah, Halloween,
over there in the graveyard.
Halloween's coming, and over here in the graveyard, I'm just digging up this box of VHS tapes. And I wanted to ask you guys, what's one movie you always have to watch near Halloween time, no matter what? You have to get it in.
Usually the movie we talked about last week, Rosemary's Baby.
Okay.
Yeah, and Halloween.
Right.
But here's one for me, and please, this will disappoint you all utterly.
Is it E.T.?
Yes, E.T.
Why don't you unplug your headphones and get out.
E.T. does have a nice Halloween scene
in
it.
It's like a good afternoon Halloween film.
Yeah, it's a good Halloween film after you get back from church. you're taking your loafers off.
Yeah, Rosemary's Baby for me. I pretty much watch it every year. I also watch The Shining every year, but not necessarily around Halloween.
Yeah, for me, The Shining is like a Thanksgiving movie.
Yeah,
it's a good one to watch around that time.
Shining is good when like there's the first snow and you're all home from work.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. The Shining's more of a winter movie, right. And Christmas, that's usually when I watch it. Yeah, it's a great. It's the story of Christ.
My pick would be Halloween 3, Seasoned of the Witch.
Such a good movie.
As much as I love the original Halloween, I love that Halloween 3 has a lot more elements about Halloween in it. Like this song that plays all through the film. And there's the whole thing about just the masks, and it's going back to like druid rituals and stuff like that.
It's so out there.
It's a weird movie. It's about, if you haven't seen Halloween 3, because a lot of people don't want to see it because it doesn't have Michael Myers in it. So they
but hey, that actually turns out to be a good thing if you followed the Halloween series.
Yeah.
Less of Michael Myers is more.
So the plot of this film is there's an Irish gentleman who runs a company that makes masks, and he's basically evil. So he steals one of the stones from Stonehenge, and he puts pieces of Stonehenge in all the masks, and then he puts on a horror TV show on Halloween night, and there's a thing called the Magic Pumpkin, and it flashes. It's like gives you epilepsy, basically. And if you're watching that while wearing one of the masks, bugs will come out of your head and kill you.
And there's a scene where a boy died from this, and it's horrific.
It is. He's watching it, and then just bugs just pour out of his head.
And his feet kick. It's really unsettling.
It's just a weird movie. There's robots in this movie. There's Tom Atkins is in this movie with his mustache.
There's some awesome shots in that movie, too. Like the scene of the kids coming over the hill. Like,
oh, that's great.
When the
sun is setting.
Yeah.
It's a fun, entertaining film.
It really is.
Are there any references to Halloween in that film?
There's actually
very subtle, right?
There's a scene where Tom Atkins is in a bar and a commercial for Halloween, the first one, comes on the TV in the bar.
That's it?
Yeah, it's pretty much. Also, there's a scene where he calls someone on the phone, and the voice on the phone is actually Jamie Lee Curtis's voice.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Something like that.
Jamie, is that you?
Yeah.
It's actually the voice of Jason Lee in his character of Earl from My Name is Earl.
Oh.
I didn't really think that joke out too clearly. There was no place to go once I got the first part of it out.
So, yeah, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
He called Gary unmarried.
Is that the Jay Moore show? What a great show.
And then my other Halloween question is, what's your favorite candy? No.
I like Rolos, individually wrapped.
I like apples unwrapped, preferably with razor blades.
With hypodermic needles within.
So this strictly isn't Halloween related. It's just, what is one horror movie or scary movie that really did scare you? Because I'm sort of desensitized where I've seen so many horror movies that even if I like them, I'm not literally scared by them.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
So,
yeah,
what is one movie for you guys that does it right?
I want to hear yours first, because you are actually scared by horror films.
Yeah,
you're a puss.
I'm going to start by telling you, when I was a child, just seeing the box art of the Critters movie would give me nightmares.
Critters?
Yes.
Are we going with Critters here?
No. Oh. I'm just telling you this story. And so I have only seen Critters in bits and pieces, but they were my worst nightmare as a child. And I used to, like, you know, in Choices or whatever your video store was, I would walk in, like, by the horror section and turn it around every time because it freaked me out so much. But the movie that fucked me up the most has to be Paranormal Activity.
Really?
Yeah, I can concur with that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a definite good, scary movie.
Right. Before sequels ruined it.
Even the sequels freaked me out a little bit. Like,
I liked part two, actually, but after that I sort of gave up on it.
Yeah, part three is unwatchable. Yeah.
The idea of being pulled out of your bed while sleeping is something that still, like, if it crosses my mind while I'm going to bed, I'm not going to fall asleep because you can kind of just sit there anticipating it.
That is exactly what it is about this film that is so scary. It's the anticipation of just a door slamming and you watching it happen and knowing that there's nothing there actually slamming that door. That is what gets me with that film. It's the anticipation, and it does it really, really, really well.
And the helplessness. Like, what do you do? Like, you sell your house? Like, that's a whole process.
And more so, the scene where the wife in that movie sleepwalks and just stands still.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
And gets back in bed
for hours.
And you see the time code on the tape just span a few hours. That really unsettled me when I saw it the first time.
The one thing about that movie that annoys me is the dude, like, the next day, like, oh, check this out. You were acting a little weird lately.
Well, he's a douchebag.
The performances are not great in those movies, but
I'd be like, look, you're getting your own bedroom. Look at this video.
I wish that had just remained one movie, because I feel like the sequels just sort of ruined the charm of that film.
Yeah, I agree.
I can't really even remember the second one, but
the second one's about her sister.
There's a scene in the second one where she gets pulled into the basement that's pretty fucking terrifying.
Yeah, I did like the second one.
And then the third one.
Third one is, it's like in the 80s or.
Yeah, and the third one has some good scares in it, even though the whole premise doesn't fit very well, because it's
in the 80s, but the film is pristine looking,
and it's like, who's changing these tapes every hour and a half?
Yeah. So Jeff, what do you got?
I'm gonna say a couple films that actually scared me. One is
couple films like Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. You've Got Mail and what have you. He deserved that,
man. Jeff looked angry.
Dave just fell out of his chair because I sawed off one of the legs.
Jeff pulled his brass knuckles from his pocket and slowly slid them on his hand.
They say badass on them.
So first is the Blair Witch Project.
Yes, that was going to be one of mine.
Yeah. I saw it in the theater by myself when my dad and his wife went and saw the Bridges of Madison County. And I said, I will not see that with you
two.
Couple
movies.
I would like to go see a movie by myself. So I saw this in the theater by myself in an empty theater.
Right.
And it was horrifying. I had been watching all this promotional material on Sci-Fi Channel about how it was real.
That was one of the first movies to really embrace viral marketing and hype.
Hey, speaking of which, we have an article about that on cutprintfilm.com.
We sure do.
By one of our writers.
And yeah, that was one of those movies. It was sort of right around the time I got the internet. So it was sort of like...
Yes, exactly.
It was like the right time and the right place for that movie.
And they were selling it as real, and I bought it, sort of. Like, I knew it wasn't real, but I just...
It was, like, fun to try and convince people that it was real.
Yeah, it scared the shit out of me without showing you anything.
Yeah, the movie is so effective because of what it doesn't show. And I remember back when it came out, there were people I knew who were like, that sucked, they never showed The Witch, and you're missing the point of that movie.
I remember hearing, like, all the hype on, like, Y100 and stuff, then... And then going and seeing it, and within like the first like 10 minutes, being like, "I've made a horrible mistake."
Yeah, it's really unsettling. Yeah. It's so real, the way they filmed it and the way the performances are given. Ugh.
Yeah, you buy those performances.
Yes, you do.
Me. They're not showy. They don't seem like they're acting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It was back before found footage became this huge subgenre, so it was sort of a unique sort of movie. And
yeah,
and just the last. The last 15 minutes of that movie are just unrelenting.
It's just horror. It's true horror.
I remember sitting in the theater and my heart, I just remember hearing my heart in my ears, like my pulse, just like, what? Yeah. And I couldn't like breathe just through that whole ending.
It's so good.
That's one of those movies that for a little while was kind of ruined by being parodied. Like, oh, yeah, do you remember absolutely. That?
Because everyone had to do the close up on the face. Yeah. And, yeah.
My other film that genuinely scared me. Well, there's two other ones. One was The Orphanage, which I've talked about before. Right. It's a great movie. It's a foreign film. Check that out. But the other one that really, really scared me is The Ring.
Right.
The Ring scared the shit out of a packed theater that I watched it with. And I talked about this before, too. But it had such an impact that it scared me legitimately. That final sequence where Samara comes out of the television after Noah, I think his name's Noah, Naomi Watts' boyfriend in the film.
Played by Russell Crowe.
No, incorrect.
After he builds the ark.
And she's crawling out of the TV. The audience I watch it with were shrieking, and I've never experienced that before or since, and I know I've said all this before on this podcast, but it had such an impact that I'm saying it again. The Ring is terrifying.
That is a good movie.
Ring left such an impact on me that just the fact that I can't even remember The Ring 2, how little an impact that left is just completely polar.
The Ring 2 is bad.
It's a bad movie.
The first one, it's so well directed. It's directed by Gore Verbinski, who made all of those terrible Pirates of the Caribbean movies. But,
oh, come on. The seventh one is
but this movie, it looks gorgeous, and it just has this great feel to it. And
yeah, I saw The Ring in the theaters. It seems like I'll only see a horror movie in the theaters when it hits that level of hype where it's like, you have to see this. It's the scariest.
Yeah.
And the only one I didn't fall victim to was The Conjuring. I just simply refused because people were saying it was terrifying.
Because it wasn't.
I like The Conjuring. I don't think it's scary, but I liked it. One of mine was going to be Blair Witch Project. And so I have two. One would be, when I was a kid, I was terrified of dying. I was convinced. I was like, I'm going to die. And I was terrified. And so, despite all this, my parents, who knew this, let me watch Pet Sematary because they knew how much I love Stephen King. So
that's very cruel of them.
So Pet Sematary, the movie, is just, it's death from beginning to end. And it's not your typical horror movie death where it's like, oh, someone died. They dwell on the death and they dwell on the process of grief and dying.
It's very real, the reaction.
It is. And that movie traumatized me as a kid. I mean, I'm not scared of it now except for the sister, Zelda, which we talked about before in the past, which is still unsettling. But just the movie in general, it traumatized me so much that I remember after I saw it, I could not sleep literally like the entire night. And I remember after the movie ended, I had to go to the bathroom, and I went to the bathroom and our shower curtain was drawn, and I was convinced the fucking sister was going to be behind that shower curtain. And I pulled it back and I was just terrified, and she was there.
Boy, wait, none of you saw that coming, did you?
Help me. But no. So that was one when I was a kid that was a big one. And then another one is a more recent movie.
Yeah, I used to check the hamper for Critters.
Oscar the Grouch.
For Critters before I would get in the shower.
And tying back to you turning the box around, I was such a glutton for punishment that even though the movie traumatized the shit out of me, I had to go get the book. And so the book is 10 times scarier than the movie. So I would read the book. And after I was done, I would have to hide the book under my bed because if I saw the cover, I would be scared of it because I was a kid at the time. So I had to hide it because just seeing the cover.
This was last week.
Yeah, this was a few days ago. So just seeing the cover would just enhance my dread. So that's, but a more recent film.
So you put cat stickers all over the cover of it.
Well, the cover has a big scary cat on it screaming. It does.
Hissing.
Yeah. But my other film would be, it's a recent film. It's called Lake Mungo.
I was going to choose that. So, good Lord, is that horrifying.
It's a found footage movie, but it's not like found footage in that it's shaky cameras and stuff. Like, it's presented like it's a documentary.
Yeah, it's sort of Ken Burns style.
Right, and it's set in Australia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's right up your alley, Dave. So it's set in Australia. It's about this family, and their daughter drowns at she doesn't drown at Lake Mungo. Lake Mungo is actually not a lake. It's like an abandoned, it's like a dry wasteland. But anyway, she drowns, and then after she drowns, the son in the family starts just fooling around with a video camera and filming the house, and he starts catching in the corner of the frame and stuff like that, her ghost. And it's a subtle movie, but it's subtly upsetting. Yeah. And
upsetting's a perfect word.
As the film plays out, there's a lot of twists in the movie, and they don't like cheapen it at all. And then this is one of those movies that even after you think everything has been wrapped up, they keep revealing stuff through the end credits, and this is the most terrifying end credit sequence I've ever seen in a film. And I just remember watching this movie, and this was probably like 2 years ago I watched it, and it was sort of the same thing with Pet Sematary, where after the movie was over, we were doing laundry, and I had to go down my basement, and the light wasn't working down there, and I was just in the basement getting the laundry out of the dryer, and I just felt unsettled, and just like,
this isn't for me.
The hair on the back of my neck was just standing up.
I can't say that you would enjoy this, because it is truly an unsettling film.
And it's not, there's no jump scares.
No bullshit. It's truly scary.
Ugh, that like makes me want to watch it, though.
It's good.
I would really recommend watching it.
Will you guys hold my hand?
Yeah. We might have to neck.
We'll have a sleepover.
But I do think you will be scared, because it is good. I also want to give a honorable mention to Dear Zachary.
Yes.
That is horrifying in another way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Real movie, that is very upsetting.
That is a real-life horror story.
There's The Others is one that doesn't get mentioned a lot, but I love
that movie.
It came out sort of the same time as The Sixth Sense, and it sort of got buried because it has sort of a similar twist.
So I think it's a much better film.
I like The Sixth Sense, but this movie, it's sort of
way
like...
way scarier.
It's like the Innocence, that film. It sort of plays off
which I also love.
Right.
And it does good service to The Innocence. It updates it,
yeah,
and Nicole Kidman for the original.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman's very good in it. I don't think she gets enough credit for this performance. Mm. She's very good in it. It's just it's another like subtle. It builds dread very well. So it's very true tension
and terror.
It does good like mythological stuff too with having to lock the door before entering. Like,
right,
it like
sets
that.
The stage wonderfully and cohesively. So I guess we should recommend movies.
We should.
Yeah. All right, let's go for it.
Well, that's way too low.
Good work.
Recommend away.
Cut for film, movie picks, cut for film, movie picks, movie recommendations.
It's time, kids. It's time to pick some movies. Watch the Magic Pumpkin. Watch. Idiots. Bugs are gonna come out of your head.
Oh my goodness.
Don't watch it. The bugs are gonna come out of your head.
Is that the only reason you brought Halloween 3 up earlier?
No, but...
That was fantastic.
That's it.
I love that. That was good.
Idiots.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
All right.
In keeping with the ghoulish Shocktober spooktacular theme, I will pick 1988's Lady in White.
Ooh.
Have either of you seen this film?
No, it's been on my list of movies to watch around this time.
It's a fun movie. It's very Spielbergian in that you can tell they were trying to make their own Spielberg movie without it being a Spielberg movie. It's set in the 60s, and it's about this young boy. He's sort of like lonely, doesn't have a lot of friends. And it's set on Halloween time, around Halloween time, and he goes to this big old school, and the school is right across from a cemetery, and it's very moody. And since he's a loner and he's a nerd, he gets picked on a lot. And one night, a bunch of bullies lock him in the coat room. Do you guys remember having coat rooms at school when you were a kid?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so they lock him in the coat room, and no one knows he's in there. And he's in there overnight, and it turns out, years ago, a little girl was murdered in this coat room, and every night, no one sees it because no one's at school, but every night, her ghost appears in the coat room, and the murder is reenacted. And you never see the killer, you just see her being strangled, and she dies. And so basically, this kid sees this, and he basically goes about trying to solve the mystery of who killed her. And it has a great atmosphere to it. It's, like I said, it's set on Halloween, and they go out of their way to make it sort of like this Norman Rockwell-ish town where... It's cool. Quaint and the leaves are changing, and it makes you nostalgic for a time you've never really experienced. So,
since Dave hasn't asked, I'll ask. What about The Lady in Red? The Christa Berg song.
That does play over the end credits, but every time they say red, they dub it over with white. So it's a good movie. I said fun already, and I sound like an idiot saying it again. So it's a fun, good movie.
All right.
So Lady in White.
I'm your boyfriend now, man.
All right, who's up next?
I'll go.
Okay,
please do. Right,
so, Roger Gorman's.
Corman?
Yeah, Corman. Sorry.
Roger Gordon.
Roger Gorton's fisherman.
What's going on here?
It was a slip of the tongue.
Oh.
The old man, Roger Corman.
Dave, please put it on that candy corn over there.
Sorry, I was tightening my
drum kit, my snare. Yeah.
Here, use this drum key.
Have you ever seen 1964's The Mask of the Red Death?
Yes.
With Vincent Price?
Yes.
I have not. And I'm a big Vincent Price fan. I just not got around
He's
seeing
He's delightful
that.
In this movie.
He's delightful in everything.
Yes, he is.
He's a charming
yes,
man.
Yes, he is.
And this is one of those movies I almost tapped out of, like, immediately and until he shows up, like, in the first scene. I was like, oh, I could just fucking watch Vincent Price all
He's
night.
He's the best.
Yeah. He is the
best. I love his cookbook, which he does have.
But this is cool. It's reminiscent of Macbeth and Roman Polanski's Macbeth, sorry, and Beckett, like I was saying before. It's really similar to Beckett, but it has like a creepy you're familiar with the Edgar Allan Poe story that it's about, The Mask of the Red Death?
Yeah, I believe it's called The Black Cat, right?
Which is my favorite Poe story, so I just love watching this movie. And it's there's nothing amazing about the film, but it's just like a cool... those 60s, like super colorful, but at the same time, there's all these. It's like a very dark subject matter.
They loved garish colors back then in those films.
So it's an awesome juxtaposition of those two themes. I love seeing that. So, yeah, The Mask of the Red Death. By Roger Gorman. He's so gory.
I think you're saying the name wrong still, but I could be wrong.
Oh, we didn't have that sound effect last time.
I got a little crazy with it this time. My pick this week is 1974's Black Christmas. I'm sure you've seen it,
I have,
Chris.
I've seen the terrible remake.
Oh, it is unwatchable. Have you seen it?
No.
Black Christmas is pretty much the first slasher film.
Is this, you referenced this last week, right?
Black Christmas?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
You did, actually.
Did I?
Yeah. You said, I'm dreaming of a Black Christmas.
No, okay. I couldn't tell if it was a joke or not, and I was like, all right, I'll go with it.
So this is about a sorority house that is terrorized by a stranger who makes frightening phone calls and then murders the sorority sisters during Christmas break. And like I said, it's one of the first slasher films, if not the first.
Yeah, it's pretty much it was the first, and then Halloween pretty much came next.
Yeah.
And Thanksgiving after Halloween.
Yeah. It kind of draws on that when a stranger calls, have you checked the children?
Yeah, it has that similar
type of thing.
Yeah.
But there's an iconic ending scene, and it's for some reason it's on the poster, the shot of the final ending.
Yeah.
It's a woman with cellophane over her face, and she's strangled to death. And the poster says, if this picture doesn't shock you out of your skin, it's on too tight. And I thought that was fantastic. So, yeah, that's my pick.
That would have been a good game to play if we just did taglines from...
Oh, yeah, maybe we'll do that next year.
Yeah, good work.
So, yeah, 1974's Black Christmas.
I saw the remake of Black Christmas on Christmas Day because they released it.
It's a true piece of garbage.
And that's the only film I've ever walked out of. I walked out of
that film. It's horrible. It's almost as bad as the remake of Amityville.
Yeah.
That's bad.
It's just a mess. Every scene just rams into each other terribly. Oof. Without any...
Well, you got cut off there, Chris.
It's all right. Those people at home listening will pick up on it.
So, yeah, that's all we got this week.
Right.
How's Robert Loggia even doing that on the piano?
He has a...
an organ grinder.
Yeah, he has
monkey.
A pipe...
yeah, what do we got coming up next week? We're diving back into the director series.
That's right.
And we're doing Mel Brooks films
this time. Who's starting that off?
I believe we're going to start with Young Frankenstein.
Oh.
Ooh, so we're staying spooky.
Yeah, it's Halloween 24/7 on the Cut for In Film podcast.
What else we got? Got any reviews coming next week?
I have a hoodie here, some shoes.
Not what I meant.
I'll have a review of Nightcrawler up next
week.
Awesome. And I'll also have an interview with Dan Gilroy, the director of Nightcrawler.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, is he a vampire? You interviewed a vampire?
Yeah. I see what you're going for, but I was slow to catch on.
Not taking the bait, are you?
Wait, do it again. Ready?
I can't do that to our listeners.
Real quick.
Wasn't he a vampire?
Yes.
Okay. See how that works?
I interviewed him. Anyway, I'll have an interview with him up next.
Oh, was his name Lestat?
No, Dave. What the fuck's your problem?
Dave, I'm telling a different type of story. So, yeah, that's what we got going on.
Did he get in your convertible on
the
way
home? Get the hell out of here.
He won't stop. He just won't stop.
Yeah.
That's all we got for Halloween.
Yeah, we got a bunch of reviews. All the reviews next week. Yeah. All of them.
We review every movie.
We'll have editorials up. And you should check out some other stuff besides us. But first and foremost, you should check out us at CupperandFilm.com.
Definitely.
But also check out AntiFanboy.com. What do they do?
They do a podcast about video games.
That's right.
Yes.
And Joystick Jerks. Check them out.
What do they do?
They do a podcast about video games.
Oh, all right.
And that's it.
Oh, I have a book. It's
you
called,
do?
Oh, yeah. It's called...
Are you trying to sell me the Bible?
Yeah. Have you heard the good news? It's called The House on Creep Street. It's written by me and my friend Joe Tonzelli. It's credited under the Blood Brothers. Go look it up on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
All right.
All right. Well, you guys, you have a safe time out there trick-or-treating.
That's right.
Don't take any wooden nickels.
Remember to wear those big garish reflector stripes on your costume, thus ruining it.
Yes, and if you're riding a bike and wearing a ghost costume, you're going to hurt yourself, so don't do that.
I'm
going to
strictly run you down on purpose.
Don't be out past 7 p.m., people.
Yeah.
Come on.
Is that the curfew?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know.
I was a kid, we trick-or-treated all night long till the cows came home.
Till the witching hour.
Yeah. And then we went to bed.
There's no more time. You've got to... Please, stop it. Stop it now. Turn it off. Turn it off. Stop it. 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 Stop it.